Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The Rates and Lanes podcast rides again as we merge onto the highway of the internet traffic and put our little flyer out there. Good evening. This is your host, Rico Muhammad. I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Tonight, we have another special guest on with us tonight. I'm going to let Chuck introduce him. I'm going to go ahead and jump into this week's Trend Lines report, and we'll get this thing off and going. So the diesel fuel prices, slowly, slight, not much of an uptick that you probably would even notice, but it did tick up ever so slightly at 0.9 percentage points. So right now, the national average price for diesel fuel is checking in at $3.41 per gallon. Dry van spot market rates hold at record high levels heading into fall. Truckload pricing continues to buck seasonal trends. Except for last year, dry van spot rates typically decline as we head into fall. But like we saw in 2020, spot rates continue to set new records and are now up 14% year over year. Reefer rates are still 18% above spot rate at the same time of this reporting of as of last year, while flatbed spot rates are amazing 17% higher over the same time frame, even compared to the high set during the last flatbed rate rally in 2018. Last week's flatbed spot rate was still 21 cents per mile higher than the rally in 2018. So a lot of good things across the board if you are and just want to kind of reiterate to a lot of you ladies and gentlemen out there before we dive into the specific rates that were going on regionally throughout the country. As we've talked about on the podcast a lot, there are still a bunch of stuff that's out. They have container ships out at these ports that can't even get in to undock. And so not to say that you should be trying to gouge the prices, but just understand and know your worth and make sure that you are getting what you need in order for your business to be able to stay profitable. And with that being said, let's jump over and see how the dry van rates were performing over the previous week regionally, starting out up in the northeastern portion, the far northeast corner of the United States. We're showing that the national average spot outbound spot market rate for dry vans checks in at $2.61 per mile. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for dry vans is at $2.75. Climbing up into the Midwest, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for dry vans is at $3.05. Coming in at the south central region, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for dry vans checks in at $2.57. And wrapping up, coming out of the west coast, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate is $2.96. Shifting gears, jumping over to the flatbed portion of the report, starting out up in that northeastern corridor, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for flatbeds is at $2.89. Coming down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for flatbeds is at $3.23. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing that the average spot market rate for flatbeds is at $3.26. That leads the nation. Coming back down to the south central region, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate checks in at $3.03. And wrapping up, coming in for the out of the west coast, we're showing that the average outbound rate checks in at $2.76. Changing over to the temperature controlled or reefer portion of the report, starting out in that northeast corridor once again, outbound spot market rates checks in at $2.92. Coming back down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate checks in at $2.81. Once again, up in the Midwest, we're showing that the outbound spot market rate for reefers is at 355. That leads the nation. So the Midwest is the hot spot across all three segment types, leading the average spot market rate for all three segment types. Moving back down to the South Central region, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for reefers is at 294. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing that the average outbound spot market rate for reefers checks in at 341. And with that, no further ado, let me go grab my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
Oh, we're doing good, Rico. Things are busy, even on this side of the border. My God, we have there's a shortage of trucks in the most darndest places. I've been in this business 47 years next month, and I've never seen a shortage of trucks in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is just north of Seattle, coming back east, because Canadian freight always works. Everything comes from the east, goes to the west. Once you're in Vancouver, good luck. It's difficult getting back. A lot of carriers will run what we call triangles, and they will go to Vancouver, and then they'll grab a load and sometimes even go empty depending on the season and go to down to California and pick up and then come back east. And now the rates coming out of Vancouver are better than they are going to Vancouver. We've never seen this in our lives, and it's got to do exactly what you said about those ships that are in the harbors and they can't do a dock. And people, you know, the retailers are very, very concerned right now that they aren't going to have anything on their shelves to sell. So, you know, we've got holidays coming up. We have Canadian Thanksgiving. Of course, we have U.S. Thanksgiving. And then we have Christmas and Halloween now is a big holiday. All these holidays coming up. And people are getting worried. So they're and the rails can't handle anymore. So it's all going on trucks, and I've never seen a shortage of freight going to the west and everything coming back from the west in my entire life. So everything's pretty much upside down. And I'm going to imagine that's putting an awful lot of pressure on carriers to hire up, because nobody can afford to have trucks parked against the fence, especially ones that work. There's a lot of broken trucks right now. So I understand with people not being able to get parts, but
right. That's putting pressure,
which is one of the many reasons I wanted to bring John on tonight, because people are getting pressured into making decisions that are normally they may not make, but because of the economics right now, there maybe people are going to be hiring people they may not normally hire. Because they've got that equipment, they've got customers screaming for their trucks. The freight rates are higher than they've ever been in this market ever since deregulation. Anyway, so before regulation was a different story, obviously. So in the last 30 years, we've never seen rates like this. So with no further ado, I would like to introduce our guest, John Farquhar, who is with Summit Risk Solutions. And I've known John for many, many years. John he was in the trucking industry. As a matter of fact, I want to introduce John, but I'm going to let him tell us what he's done. He's been around the trucking industry for a long time, and he certainly has earned his way up. So, John, with no further ado, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you. How you doing, Rico? Nice to meet you.
The pleasure is all mine, John. I appreciate you taking time out to come on the show and join us.
Oh, I'm so happy to be on the show, to be honest with you. My wife made me even have a bath and clean up and trim up and shave just because she said somebody might see you. And I said, so, well, okay, we'll work on that. So, yeah, that'll work. At least, if anything, I smell good. Let's go that way.
Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, I was going to comment how nice you smell tonight, John.
Oh, thank you. And your hair looks lovely, Chuck. I have to admit, you've done a great job.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Rico and I go to the same barber.
God, it won't be long. I might be getting there myself. So anyway, but yeah.
We'll get a 3-for-2 special anyways.
There you go. I like it already. I like it. So anyway. To kind of jump in there, I actually was just at a session here not too long ago, and they were asking how long I'd been in the industry, and I had to count it up, and it's been 40 years now since I got behind the wheel of a truck. So it's been quite a long time. So, but I like a lot of guys like yourself, I started out as a driver. You know, my family's been in trucking most of their lives. My uncles, my grandfather, my dad, my mother even drove. So it was in the blood, you know, diesel was pumping and it was time to go. So we were, when we were eligible to get our license, we had our license. We were actually driving before we were eligible, but nonetheless, it's kind of funny because in the U.S., you know, you have to be 21 years old to operate interstate commerce. And I was actually one of those guys that was doing it 18 years old and surprisingly never got caught. I drove truck for a number of years and then got brave and bought a truck and got into the owner-operator phase and then moved into owning a couple of trucks and some drivers. And then in the mid-90s, I didn't start a company. I took over and purchased a company. I was working for an outfit. We were running decks all over North America, decks, double drops, over dimensional. And the fella who was one of my mentors in the industry and life decided he wanted to retire and said, why don't you just buy me out? So I bought his company and we ran it for a number of years and we grew it from there and moved up into owner operators and then more company trucks. And, we ran for, I think it was till early 2000, 2003, we decided to shut it down. And I got into the risk management. My last Peterbilt was a 2002. And at that time, in the Canadian market, the exchange rate was $1.65. Needless to say, I bought that brand new Peterbilt with American money because it was way cheaper. when we closed it down, we had lost a couple of customers, some of our large clients, because they could no longer compete in the U.S. Right. market because of the exchange rate. You know, they just couldn't compete with the freight rates were killing them. So we wound it down. I had a couple owner operators who wanted to retire and the writing was on the wall. So we thought, well, let's try something different. So I got into the risk management approach, consulting different transportation companies. I was working on our own. We took the trucking company, closed it down. I used the name as the consulting firm and actually had a number of carriers that I actually did work with. We swapped freight back and forth. They called me up and said, hey, you used to do this stuff for your own company. Can you come help us out? We're in a bit of a jam. We need to make sure our papers are in order and documents. So I said, yeah, let's do this. So, and then I kind of went back to school and we got some certifications and lots of extra training and kind of took off from there. Did that for a couple of years. And then a very large global insurer happened to find me at a carrier that I was doing some work with. And, they liked what I was doing, so they offered me a position on their risk team. So I started working for a company called Zurich. And So we were with them for 7, almost 8 years, and I worked my way up from just the a field consultant or specialist up to being the national transportation manager for the whole team. And upgraded their training program, did all the training, mentoring with the new recruits we brought on, and, kind of changed the dynamics a little bit. They had good foundation. We just kind of tweaked on it a little bit. And then in 2013, we decided to switch gears, and we went to work with a company called The Guarantee, which was solely Canadian, owned by Canadians.
Yep.
And we created a division that specialized in nothing but transportation for higher cross-border traffic. And we kind of did the same thing, small elite team, and we just built a product that was like no other and had a lot of fun. Unfortunately, that company was sold in late 2019 to another insurance company, and unfortunately, it just didn't work out for me. We had different paths that we wanted to go, and we decided we didn't want to go down their path, so we left and took some time off, and then, what was it, August last year? So we're just over a year now. We started Summit Risk Solutions. So
congratulations.
Yeah, so we kind of took all that knowledge we gathered over the last 40 years and thought, you know what, I can sure help a lot of people. Why don't we put something together here and see what we can do? So I'm not so much a safety consultant as some people would think. I'm more of a risk specialist where we come in, we evaluate your operation, we help you to understand the risks that are associated with what you're doing, and we help put an insurance view to it, how you need to view this, because this is what underwriters are looking at, this is what claims professionals are looking at, these are the things that are dictating what your insurance premiums are going to be. So we're able to kind of put a spin on it, help them understand it, provide recommendations, and then show them, mentor them, help them, assist them to own this responsibility. A lot of people will kind of duck and jive it, and they'll hire a consultant to come in and do all the paperwork, whereas I'm going, this isn't rocket science, guys. You can do this. Let's show you what you need to do. Let's show you how to own this responsibility, because then when you do that, you have better control of your entire operation. Don't leave it to the third parties.
And, you know, we all know that truckers don't like paperwork. There are a lot of us, really, if you look back, you know, I think back, why I ever got into this business way, way back. One of the things besides for my love of trucks was didn't need a lot of paperwork. And now I look at how many people I have doing paperwork in our office and things have changed. But, you know, it's just like everything else. But, yeah, and I think they've certainly created an awful lot of paperwork that truckers have to do, different filings and everything else. And let's say it's a big job and people do need to learn how to do it. The I love your view, and you and I through the years have had several discussions about risk management. We've always we've always been on side with that. There's never been any issue between us, and and I do believe that's one of the issues I think we have as an industry. There's a lot of people that get into this and they don't understand that they have to. They really are going to own that risk. If you hire that individual that is questionable, then you are taking everything you have worked for in order, and you're gambling it on that person. And I thought of something yesterday. There was a fellow came by for a position as an owner-operator, and you know what? We turned him away. He had a good driving record, but he just didn't understand the safety side of things. Although somehow he had a clean driving record, you know, driving for 3 years, no issues. But we just looked at him and saw some things on his truck that were just screaming at us, and we just immediately said no. And that brought something to mind here, and you tell me if I'm thinking right or wrong. Not everybody is going to think the way we think, because we are, first of all, trucking isn't our main business. Our main business is load brokerage and providing solutions for customers, and trucking is certainly one of the smallest parts of our business, but nonetheless, we're still in it, and we have a responsibility towards other people on the road and our insurance partner as well, and a responsibility to everybody that works for Traffics that we're going to hire the right people. And I thought, I wonder if there's an opportunity for the insurance companies to actually run some sort of a testing center Has that ever been thought of, John? Because when I saw this guy, I know that one of my competitors is going to grab him. And it's not that this person shouldn't have a job, but he doesn't understand safety. And if I had to bet, well, when I went to bet on him, along with, you know, our other guys, we didn't want to bet on him. And mm-hmm. I put myself in the same shoes as an insurance provider. Other people don't necessarily think that way. And since the insurance company is really placing the final bet on that, on whether that person is going to be successful or not, do you think that there's an opportunity here for insurance companies to take an active role in testing of drivers they're going to insure?
Very much so, and there has been success in that. Northbridge Insurance, actually,
yes.
They do some of it, and prior to them becoming Northbridge, when they were known as the Markells of the world,
right.
they had their own training school. They had tractor trailers. They did training. Now, they don't have the school anymore as far as the tractor trailer is, but what they do is they do – We'll do evaluations. So they have a training school in Guelph, Ontario, and they do some training in class, and apparently they do some in-cab training and evaluations. But they're one of the only few, or one of the only in Canada that will do that. And they're even, I know that they've been talking about stepping away from it even more. And the
Why?
Reason being is, insurance companies don't like liability, and that's the problem. They'll insure it, but they don't want to be associated with it. And you'll find that any insurance company out there will go, this is what you need to do, but they'll be damned if they'll show you how to do it or help you do it, because they don't want to take on the liability, because if something happens, you would have the right to sue them over that. And they don't want to take that risk. So they're more apt to go, this is what you need to do, and now you have to go fix it, and then they're hands off. All they did was they told you what you needed to do to fix the problem. You have to take care of it. So now whoever you hire hopefully will do what they need to do. This is kind of what spurs the third party market of consultants to come out and provide these testing services and other schools, training schools and stuff like that.
But are there some of these, like I know that from what I have seen, there's only been a couple of schools where I would want to, I'm just speaking for this market, but you and I live in Southern Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
There's only a couple of schools that I've seen where the graduates come out and they were top notch.
Yes.
One of them was Markell. Their graduates were incredible. The other being Kim Richards, and the other being mm-hmm. Humber College. Those three, and I can't think of any other ones. And when I've had conversations through the years with drivers and owner operators that were onboarding, and one of the questions that they will get asked, even before they step into a truck, do you know how to check brakes? And 90% of them go no, and you go, well, where did you get your license? How can they? But they don't. Now, of course, you take a graduate from those three schools I mentioned, and as you said, Markell isn't even around anymore. So those two schools, Kim Richards and Humber College, you take graduates from there, they know how to check brakes. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, if you can get hold of one of those graduates, and you never get your hands on them, but if you ever did, the insurance companies, back when you were with Zurich, I remember, now maybe
mm-hmm.
something
mm-hmm.
changed, but the insurance companies used to say, if he's gone to those schools, that's worth 3 years on the road. Is it still like that?
Not so much, no.
Okay.
What you've got, so I'm going to take a step back to the first part of your question. What you have now, particularly in Ontario, and I haven't seen this in any other province across Canada or even the U.S., but in Ontario, we have an association called TTSAO, Truck Training Schools Association of Ontario. And what it is it's a group of like-minded training schools that have joined forces, and they are working on a, well, not working, they're delivering a curriculum that insurance companies are now endorsing. So,
this is good.
In Ontario, we have programs. It's called mandatory entry-level training. Some of us have switched it up to minimum entry-level training. in Ontario in particular, you have to complete 103.5 hours of in-class, in-cab, in-yard training in order to get your Ontario Class A CDL license. The TTSAO program is 200 hours. And these schools that are TTSAO accredited deliver on the 200 hours. And what's interesting is TTSAO is policing those schools. So they're going in and doing internal audits on these companies to make sure that they are following through with the curriculum, documentation, proper management, placement with companies, and dotting the I's and crossing the T's.
Right.
So there's been a number of insurance providers who have actually jumped onto that association, and there's a division within the TTSAO called the Insurance Group. And it's insurance people, representatives, brokers, insurance companies, and whatnot. And they're supporting what the TTSAO is doing. So when you have an insured or one of their clients looking to hire drivers and they come to you and say, yeah, we're hiring from this school, they're TTSAO approved, the insurance company feels a little bit better because it's a better curriculum. It's a longer process to get it.
Right.
Now, what they were doing was, with regards to that 3 year, it's now down to about 2 years. But what they're saying is it's you don't have the experience of a 2 year driver, but what you've gained is enough experience that should bring you to the level of understanding of somebody that's 2 years. So it's more just a knowledge approach, I guess you could say, because you've been working with mentors and whatnot. But it's not going to give you 2 years experience, but it will give you that accreditation to go, okay, you've had special training in a lengthy program with an accredited school. So when you talk about the Kim Richardsons of the world, the Humber College, those guys are part of TTSAO, and there are a number of other ones. So you can actually go to their website and find them. But the problem being is, guys coming out of there, boom, got a job right away. You just can't keep them. You can't get them, as you'd already made that comment. It's just you need to be going to these schools before the drivers come in and setting up relationships with these schools to let them know what you're going to do. And to kind of carry this on a little bit further, these schools that are TTSAO accredited, what they're looking for is like-minded motor carriers that are going to sit there and go, I want to hire these good guys you got coming out. And the school's going, okay, that's fine, but what are you going to do with them when we hand them over to you? Because all we've done is given them 200 hours. They're better than 103.5, but they still need further finishing. They still need more mentoring. So what is the programs you're going to have? And those motor carriers that have really good training and mentoring programs and documented processes are going to get first dibs on those guys coming out of those schools.
Yeah, and you know what? And so they should. And those are the, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, those are the companies that have an awful lot of equipment. They have hundreds of trucks, if not thousands.
Yep.
And
yep.
they can put the resources aside to offer continuous training for those individuals.
Correct.
And and maybe even eventually bring them up to a level where they can buy a truck through the company. If they treat them right and they don't treat them like a number. And I think we do, and please, no offense to our American listeners, but Canada being so much, we're one-tenth your size. So we don't have very many companies in Canada that are even 10% the size of a Schneider or J.B. Hunt. You know, there's only a handful of large companies that have in excess of, I would think, 1,000 trucks. Am I right, John? So
yeah, you know, when you take a look at maybe a Trans Freight, that's a group of companies. It's not one company.
Yeah.
It's a group of companies. So, you know, very large in the scope of Canada, all combined, might be getting up in there to play in that field, but they don't have one company within that group that would even come close to that.
Right. Yeah, I think they're probably their largest in the U.S. would be, well, they did buy Overnight recently, but that's an LTL carrier, and they bought CFI. Contract freighters out of Joplin.
Yep.
But even contract freighters, and I've done business with those guys since the 1987. Phenomenal company, but I don't think they're one of the big players. I don't think they come anywhere close to a company like Werner. And those guys run their own, you know, the Werners of the world and Schneider down in the U.S. I don't know what Schneider does up here in Canada anymore, but I know at one time they had a training center, and they were taking green drivers and training them. I don't know if they're still doing that over in Aberfoyle or Guelph. Oh, they still do that?
Yep. They
with green
still
drivers?
Do that. Yep, still. Yep.
Now,
yep.
Are they
can come right in there
into the U.S.?
Once they're trained? Once they're trained, they team them up. They go with a trainer from within the organization and whatnot. So, you know, and it's a great place to go. Schneider has a good training program. There's no doubt. So they're, you know, I've always had many companies go, look, you can't get a job anywhere else. Go work for Schneider, go put in a year there and then go look around. So,
yeah, exactly. And you know, I've had a couple of their drivers through the years who had gone through their course and they were good drivers. I remember the manual, the one woman showed me that she got. What she didn't like about Schneider's was she never knew what she was going to be doing, and it was just too big a company. But she said it was well run, and she showed me the driver's handbook, and it was the size of the New York City, including all five boroughs, white pages. It was that big.
Wow.
So, you know, there was a lot of information in there. They had definitely taken their time to document every aspect of a driver's duty. You know, and those are some of the things that a smaller carrier could never do. So, John, tell me something. When you're looking at companies, I know you still do work with insurance companies, and you're looking for, you go in and you do the preliminary test, or, you know, you're checking things out to see how it's run. Tell us some of the things that you are looking for that put that carrier in your good books, and some of the things that you go, whoa, this scares me, I don't like this. Would you mind telling us that?
Sure. Yeah. So I'll kind of give you a little preliminary overview of how we kind of approach it. And then you have your high spots where you're hitting, which are very heavily weighted in your overall scoring mechanism. So, but, you know, first off, you know, when I meet customers, it's kind of like, I want to kind of get to know them. I want to put them at ease because it's a very lengthy process. It's 5-6 hours with the customer, you know, doing this evaluation process. So, you know, it's you know, the small talk, you know, what do you guys do? Where do you travel? What kind of freight do you haul? La-da-da-da-da-da-da kind of thing, and helps them to get them to understand what I'm looking for. But at the same time, I can start showing them I can talk the same language. I've been there. I've done this. I know what you're doing, and I understand it. So it helps them to kind of go. And then we kind of get into going, all right, let's, you know, the big high area, the most important area is drivers, personnel. How do you hire people? How do you manage them? How do you train them? How do you control them? What is it you do? And this, you know, becomes a very big area within the evaluation process. And we get right down to, I want to know what it is you're looking for when you hire a driver. You know, do you have a hiring criteria? And I always let people tell me what they've got. You know, so if it's a hiring criteria, for instance, I'll say, okay, well, tell me about your hiring criteria. Okay, yeah, got to have a minimum 2 years experience. Can't have any more than one speeding violation. Can't have any crashes in the last 3 years. You know, got to be this age. Got to have this this many years experience. Got to have driven in these types of vehicles, and you know, all these kind of things. And better have red shoes and green socks, and make sure their hair is parted to the left. And it's like, okay, cool, that's some good stuff. I said, now prove it to me. And that's the time that usually most people go, what do you mean, prove it to me? I said, well, you've just told me a great story. You've told me a great process that you've got. You've obviously spent a lot of time figuring out what it is you need in the right driver. I'm the judge for Missouri. Show me. And I'll want to see a document. Show me the document that says, here's what our hiring process is. And that's when they usually start to fall down, because now the documentation that needs to be doesn't support the language that's being spoken. We'll maybe not even have a document, or they will pull it out. And what I love is when they pull it out and they hand it to me, and I'll go, okay, let's run down through this again, because this says this and you told me that, and you know, this isn't matching up now. So now we have a disconnect on what you've written versus what you're telling me. And then it's usually a bit of a backup to go, well, yeah, but, you know, the times are really hard. I understand the times are hard. But if you're going to say that, you better print this. So, and then if it does match up and we get somebody that says exactly what their hiring criteria is, then it's like, all right, perfect. Let's have a look at a driver file. I want you, before I even open it, a driver file will be sitting there in front of me, and I'll say, before I open this, tell me what's missing. You know, what am I not going to find before I open this thing up? I'm giving you a chance to tell me what the issues are with this document before I look at it. And they'll, you know, usually rhyme off, oh, it's got all the application, it's got the history, it'll match what this criteria is, it'll say this, it'll say that, everything's good. That is in perfect order, Mr. Farquhar. Okay, so let's turn the page, you know, and we get into it right away. And then I have yet to find a perfect driver file that matches regulations. You know, little things like the driver forgot to sign this, or there's a date missing, or the person that was doing the hiring forgot to sign off on the hiring process to say that this person was hired on this date. We don't have a hiring date. Well, that's interesting. It says he filled in the document on this date. By the time you completed your background review, you should have signed off to say, yep, he's hired as of this date. Well, there's nothing. So why is this not here? You know, now we need to go back to payroll records to find out what. So little things like that, you know, a road test. You know, they'll do a road test. But what I really love is when I see a road test or a road evaluation, everything is all check marked. Nothing's wrong with it. The guy is a perfect driver. And it's like, cool, this is interesting. He's only got 6 months experience. So you're telling me this guy is as good as the guy that has 10 years experience? And they're like, well, no, it's not what it is. I said, well, what does it mean? Because that's what it looks like. If I take the file for the guy that's 10 years here and look at his road test, there's no difference. Yet this guy's got 6 months. So, you know, again, it's be truthful. Document everything out the wazoo and grade it. You know, if he wasn't that great backing up, then say he wasn't that great and he needs practice, he needs work. You're not going to be penalized for it, but what you're going to be able to do is say, this guy is a good contender, I like what he's got the right attitude, but he needs some more experience backing up. Joe, let's put him with Bob for a couple of weeks and see if we can improve that in his backing up skills. And if he works out, we're going to hire him full time. Perfect. But that's what, you know, we're going to kind of jump real fast. That's what the lawyers and the courts are looking for. When we get pulled in front of the judge.
I was going to ask a question about that.
Well, ask it. Go for it, Rico.
Well, I think that a lot of times, so I'm hearing what you're saying, and I've been through that process with larger companies of the like when going through a road test, and you know, and like you say, they just check everything off. So I'm wondering, is that kind of what happens to everyone to kind of CYA to prevent. If you do put a derogatory mark or say that he needs practice or something like that, then does that give ammunition to plaintiff's bar to then, if you do hire that person, well, you knew that he wasn't sufficient when you hired him. Why did you hire him?
Right. So the trick
should they be involved in an accident?
Right. So to kind of bring in that CYA aspect there, that's where you want to be able to support that evaluation or that road test that has that comment on it. Because what you're doing is in that process, you're presenting strengths and weaknesses, right? He's weak in this area. He's not that good here. He needs some help. But what you're doing is you're going to shore it up on the other side because we're going to show the training. We're going to show the mentoring that this young man went through to improve those weak skills that he had that we found. And this could go over weeks, months, you know, but what we're doing is we're going to back it up to say, yep, he wasn't very good at backing up when we hired him, but look what we did here. We sent him out with this driver for 3 weeks. We've documented every week as we've gone through, shown that his weaknesses has become a strength. Now he's really good. We then reevaluated him and wow, awesome. And that's what actually will take the wind out of the sails of a plaintiff lawyer is when you can say, yep, we had a weakness, but look what we did to strengthen it. And that's when you pull it out. What you have is when you have a or where the issue comes into play is when you have a road test that says everything's perfect. And if I pull all your drivers, if I have 100 drivers and they all have the same road test and they all have the same score, that's a red flag. Because now I'm not going to believe you, because if I start looking at their driver abstracts, and I find, oh, this guy's got a speeding issue, and this guy's habitual on bad lane changes, and I'm not stopping for stop signs, I'm going to start going back to the road evaluation and go, well, how is that possible that you scored him perfect when he has all these violations since then? That tells me your testing processes are lacking. You're not telling me the truth. So that's where plaintiff attorneys are going to have fun with it and go, this is interesting because all these documents are identical. So you really don't have a solid training process. So when we get into that testing phase, that's when I tell people, stop using check marks and X's. Use numbers and letters. A, B, C, D, E, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Grade those areas of the driver's ability. And make sure that you have a scoring mechanism that says what each one of those is. So, like, for instance, a one might be he cannot complete the task without somebody showing him what to do. A three might be, wow, he can really do pretty good. He needs a little bit of help, but not much. And a five might be, this guy's phenomenal. He could teach other people how to do this task. And when you can put that type of process into your testing phases, now all of a sudden you have five different categories that you're measuring strengths and weaknesses in. And if you have a number of these that are kind of going, these are all coachable, why don't we put him through our training program and we'll document that process the same way when we send him with Bob the trainer. And then we can show that those ones and twos are turning into threes and fours. And again, that type of documentation will take the wind right out of the sail of any plaintiff lawyer.
Wow, interesting stuff. That's just now a lot of that goes, how do you grade? Like, I find this is fascinating, but I got to tell you, it's a little more difficult for us because we're mostly owner-operator. We demand 3 years. Once in a while, we'll make an exception of 2.5 or 2 once in the blue moon. I don't think we have anybody that has 2 years experience now. We don't have any turnover, so most of our guys have been with us for, my God, for years and years and years. And, you know, because we hire seasoned seasoned drivers, we don't have the issues that we used to have when we had younger drivers and we had more company drivers. We just don't have that turnover. It's the same guys. And you know what? They had a guy, you know, a guy was telling us today, how much money I saved by driving 58 miles an hour. That's music to my ears as a fleet owner, because mm-hmm. he's making more money as an owner operator. He gets it, number one. And number two, because he's making more money. Number three, that's a lot easier on our safety record than mm-hmm. than somebody that's going 20 miles faster, obviously. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's music to my ears. But you don't necessarily get that with a company driver, especially a younger one, that's out there. He's trying to make time. He's trying to do a cross-country trip and average 600 miles a day, which is possible when you're going through the Dakotas, but not always possible when you're driving through Michigan, Indiana, and Illinois. So, and that's where you get somebody that's younger and paid by the mile, or even paid by the trip, where you get into problems. So when I look at our fleet with owner-operators, you know, our guys, the only problem that we do see when we're doing road tests is we do get guys that don't know how to check brakes. But what we do to mm-hmm. solve that is we send them into our shop and the mechanic shows them so they understand. Mm-hmm. As far as the backing up and all those things, they, you know, any of the road tests I've done through the years, it's, you know, those things haven't been an issue. One thing I will say, though, that I have noticed through the years, and, you know, other people agree, if you get a candidate that's been driving a lot into the Northeast, like into Jersey, New York, Boston, and those are places we don't run anymore, but those guys have a tendency to tailgate. And I don't know if you've noticed that in what you do. You know, and that's one of the reasons I don't, we don't send trucks there anymore. Because the traffic is just too crazy. But have you noticed the same thing?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Usually, any one of the things that's kind of interesting is, from an insurance perspective, the insurers will look at jurisdictional areas, right?
Right.
And they're looking at it because of one of those aspects is congestion. You know, like Georgia, for instance, the Atlanta region will be of higher risk than the rest of Georgia. And it'll be because of congestion. It'll be because of theft. You know, it's a high target area for theft, cargo theft and equipment theft. So depending on how much you're running through these jurisdictions that kind of have an uptick or a flag because of various reasons, is definitely going to have an effect on your premiums. So, and this is what underwriters are looking at, because one of the things they always want to know is, where do you run? I want to see your IFTA records, because I want to know what states you travel through and provinces. But also at the same time, more and more insurers are getting on the bandwagon of going, well, what are some of the regular lanes that you run through? You know, so for instance, as an example, for what you're telling me, you don't run the Northeast region. But I bet you do run a bit of New York State, because you're probably dropping down through Buffalo, maybe going through Pennsylvania, Ohio.
Yeah. We do run that 100 kilometers into along the New York Thruway to the Pennsylvania border. But that's it.
Right.
We don't go, as a rule, we don't go any further past this. We don't take the Thruway east ever.
Right. So a junior underwriter would look at your IFTA report and go, holy crap, they run to New York. Oh, that's not good. I got to give them a charge, because New York State is a very litigious environment. But a seasoned underwriter is going to look at that and go, okay, they run New York. I need more information. Where in New York do they go? And if you say, oh, we only run the western portion of New York to go to Pennsylvania or Ohio, where our destination is, they're going to go, okay, you're in a very less populated area. You're going through a bit of Buffalo, no big deal. If you were running Albany or New York City, oh, crap, different story. Price tag goes up. So it's all about knowing where you're traveling, just not what states you're traveling in, which is very, very helpful. So that kind of, you know, it, again, adds to what the underwriter wants to know to help price the account.
Now, my understanding, John, is if you're running trucks down south of Orlando, like into Dade and Broward counties down towards the Miami Lauderdale area, you will face if that's your steady lane, you will face an insurance surcharge as compared to if you are running the Panhandle. Is that true, or is it the whole state of Florida?
It majority of the counties in Florida, but there's a lot of now. Years ago, it used to be what state that you travel in that is has a higher litigious favoritism than other states. But now it's gotten down to counties within that state. Texas, for instance, has always been known as a high litigious environment. But it turns out it's not all of Texas. It's just select counties within Texas that are worse than others. We've all probably heard of Cook County in Illinois, which is the most litigious environment of all of North America. They're worse than New York State. But anything within Cook County, you might as well just get ready to get your pen ready to write a check. It's just going to get ugly. So it's getting down more to a more granular level, looking at counties and tighter jurisdictions rather than just states. So you are correct. In Florida, there are some counties that are worse than others. It's all about the court systems, right? How easy it is to sue and how the wins are versus the losses. This is what insurers are looking at.
Yeah, with good reason. Now, another thing I want to talk to you, we had a guest last week, David Owen, who started a group called NASDEC, National Association of Small Trucking Companies. And David came out and said, you know, if I knew how to drive a truck and I was a trucker, I would never work for anybody that's got any type of inward-facing camera. I think it's an invasion of privacy. And I certainly understand where he's coming from because he, with all due respect to David, I have the utmost respect, he's never run a trucking company. I do understand the advantage to inward-facing cameras, why companies want them. And I know that they're going to be they're going to be just as common as truck bumpers within 5 years. But what's your view on them, your personal view?
Well, I'm a big advocate of dash cameras and whatnot, more so forward facing than anything. I understand that, you know, there are concerns, privacy concerns that are being utilized. And I think drivers need to understand the bigger picture here. To help them understand the environment that's going on. And I don't think they do. They're looking at, you're wanting to see what I'm doing all the time. You're looking after me.
Right.
Well,
nobody has time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm not wanting to watch you all the time. And what with the technology out there, I don't need to watch you all the time because we have this artificial intelligence built into these systems now that the system watches you. I'm not. And it just alerts me when you're not doing properly, you know, and a perfect example. Let's just take a perfect example of the latest headlines that we've heard about the $1 billion verdict in Florida. Yeah. There was a Canadian company involved with that and a company from the U.S. And both of them the crashes were related to distracted driving. So you take and put into play a dash camera that is inward facing. And if you were truly distracted and not paying attention to what you were supposed to be doing, which was operating the vehicle safely and down the road, the AI technology would actually send you a beep in the cab to say, beep, 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 hey, pay attention, you know, because what it's doing is it's picking up your head movement and it notices that you're looking down into your lap or off to the side. And so it's thinking you're not paying attention out the window. Now, you can look down for a second and back up and you're fine. But if your head stays down for a couple of seconds or more, 3, 5, 7 seconds, all of a sudden the alarm goes off to say, hey, buddy, pay attention. And at the same time, it sends an alert back to head office to the dashboard to say, hey, this guy's had an alert. And it records it. Doesn't mean that there's somebody sitting there watching it. But if I have enough of them, I get to go back in the system and go, oh, jeepers, creepers, look at this. Chuck's had 10 alerts in the last hour. I'm going to go back and look at this footage and find out what Chuck's doing. Right, you know. And 9 times out of 10, it's a behavioral issue. You know, I was actually on a call here earlier today, and we were talking about dash cameras. And one of the things that I said, and I've said this many times before, no driver wants to be a bad driver. They just don't know how to be a good driver. Well, the only way you're going to become a good driver is through mentoring and coaching. You know, and I get some people that will go, oh, the guy just needs more experience on the road. Well, yes, but if you don't steer him down the right path, well, then he's only going to get bad experience and he's not going to know the difference. So a lot of times we can't be sitting beside the driver. We've said that many times, Jeff, here's the keys of the Peterbilt, carry on to California, but nobody can sit beside him. Well, now I can put somebody in that vehicle that says, hey, Bob, pay attention. Come on, watch what you're doing. Put the phone down, you know, because that has become an epidemic with the cell phones, and the distractions are just horrendously terrifying. So we need to do a better job at helping these drivers be better. We're not necessarily trying to monitor what they're doing. I hired you to do a job, but I want you to do it the right way. So these tools are going to help coach you to be the best driver you possibly can. I'm not here to babysit.
No, I never realized until now, but what really trucking, and I'm not a golfer, but we had a friend that was, and he said, you know, the worst thing you can do is not take lessons and just go. You'll never be a good golfer because all you're doing is you're reinforcing your bad habits. And
exactly.
I'm going, you know what? Trucking is the same thing. If you're driving a certain way, you don't realize you're doing it wrong. And nobody's there to correct you. You're just going to, you know, for your whole career, which could be 40 or 50 years, you may be doing something wrong. And if somebody has an opportunity to say, hey, you know what, do this and you'll have better results, you're that much better a driver. Yep. And maybe it takes some of the stress off you. That's a great point.
Oh, big time. Big time. Well,
now,
with a client that I had here in the past, you know, not too long ago, they've got the Samsara dash cameras. They're all inward facing and outward facing. And one of their drivers, we just kind of picked a driver. And interesting enough, he was getting alerts on his system. What was it? I think it was one every 10 to 12 minutes. And and when we looked at the alerts, like within an hour, you know, he'd had like, holy crap, 6, 7, 8 alerts. And it was like, this is crazy. Well, when we looked at the footage, he kept reaching down and grabbing his phone and having a look at it, and then he'd put it away.
Ooh.
And it just kept going on and on and on. You know, when you're having, you know, close to 10 in an hour, that's pretty distracting. So
yes,
rather than penalize the driver, we brought him in, sat down and talked and said, you know, like, we want to talk to you about your phone usage. And looking at your phone, and he kind of put his head down and put his hand in his head. Oh, I'm sorry. I know I do it. And we asked the question, how often do you think you do it? And he goes, oh, I bet you I do it at least once an hour. I probably do it, once an hour. I know that, you know, throughout the day, that's probably a dozen times I'm looking at it. And what we did is we turned the footage on and showed him, and he was blown away and didn't realize how often he was doing it. And when we showed him, you do this probably 10 times an hour, multiplied times 12 hours. Holy crap, buddy. So he did not realize that he had this habit. You know, it was a bad habit, but he didn't know it was a habit because, well, nobody ever showed him. So with some coaching back on the road, and we turned on the alert system. So now every time he did it, it reminded him, whoa, okay, can't do that anymore. Stop, stop, stop. It got down to the point where he was now doing it once or twice a day. And he was more conscious of it and doing it much less. So And you can break a habit. You know, I got toilet trained when I was a kid, so I know that habit can be broken. I'm sure we can break the distracted driving habit.
Well, this has been great.
We've blown through the hour already. If you would like to leave your information, how people can get in contact with you and how they can reach you, we'll turn the floor over to you right now and let you be able to get that out there.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, they can reach me via my website at summitrisksolutions.ca. My email is john@summitrisksolutions.ca. And feel free to call me if anybody wants to call and chat. We provide services all over. My number is 226-802-2762.
Well, John, we appreciate it again for you taking time out, coming on the show and hanging out with us for an hour. Very informative hour. We definitely appreciate it. Chuck Snow.
Yeah, if anybody wants to get hold of me, my extension is 203, and the phone number is 800-388-4352, extension 203, or just send me an email, include your phone number on it. It's just chuck@traffix.com. And if I can help anybody out there, just reach out to me. I love to pay it back. Go ahead, Rico. You want to put this thing back in the hole?
Yes, sir. As we pull off of the highway and try to find us a good spot to park until next week, we want to thank you guys out there. The most important part of the show, the listeners. Without you, we wouldn't have anyone to be doing this for, so we definitely appreciate it whether you're listening to us live or you're listening to a download. We want to thank you for taking the time out to do that. You could have been anywhere else in the world, and you could have done anything else in the world, but you took a little time to hang out with us. We're always eternally grateful for you doing so. So with that being said, hopefully we were able to provide something that you found helpful this week. As always, you can always hit us up on Facebook or Instagram. Let us know if you got anything that you would like for us to cover on the podcast. Give us some homework. Put us to work for you. And we try to bring the information and bring the people that know that type of stuff to you so that you can add more tools to your toolbox. And with that being said, we want you guys to stay safe out there, everybody. Stay healthy. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise. And until next time, we'll talk at you. God bless you and good night.
Catch you on the flip-flop. God bless.